This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A U.S. Navy fighter jet rolled off an aircraft carrier today and sank into the Red Sea. The USS Truman positioned off Yemen's coast and part of the mission to disable Iran-backed Houthi rebels. Strongholds, ABC's Stephen Portnoy has more.
The incident occurred as the $70 million jet was being towed from the hangar bay of the aircraft carrier USS Harry S. Truman. Both the fighter jet and the tow tractor rolled off the carrier deck and into the Red Sea. Two crew members, one on board the FA-18 and another inside the tractor, jumped out in time. But officials say one sailor suffered a minor injury.
Happening now at the White House, President Trump welcoming the Philadelphia Eagles to celebrate their Super Bowl win back in February. Russia has called for a pause in fighting for 3 days next month with Ukraine to mark the 80th anniversary of V-Day. The U.S., Europe, and Ukraine voicing concern over that temporary ceasefire as talks are focused on a 30-day ceasefire, something Ukraine has already agreed to. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Southwest Wisconsin Technical College recently received a $1.6 million design-build project to enhance campus resiliency and sustainability while delivering cost savings and enhanced efficiency. The $1.6 million design-build project includes a 300-kilowatt solar array and a 125-kilowatt battery storage system installed in an area behind the Knox Learning Center. The electricity produced by the solar array will be used exclusively for Building 400, one of the most populated buildings on campus during the summer. The system is expected to produce approximately 352,710 kilowatt hours, or approximately 60% of the building's electricity, saving the college approximately $30,000 per year in utility cost. Southwest Tech contracted with Amerisco to develop a 10-year comprehensive energy plan. The plan, which was fully completed by January 2024, outlines a path to achieve a 62% reduction in building energy use and a 100% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions over the next decade through four primary strategies: electrification of gas-fired equipment, lighting upgrades and controls, HVAC control strategies, and solar installations. As part of its commitment to sustainability and innovation, the college has plans to use the new solar array and battery energy storage system as educational tools to teach students and train apprentices. By integrating these renewable energy technologies into their curriculum, the college aims to provide hands-on learning experiences that will prepare students for careers in the growing field of sustainable energy. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Bad news for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks' Damian Lillard has suffered a torn Achilles tendon in his left leg. An MRI today confirmed the injury. It happened in the first quarter of the Bucks' 129-103 loss to the Pacers in their playoff game last night in Milwaukee. Lillard, who turns 35 this summer, could be out for the next year. Head coach Doc Rivers.
That's why you have teammates and family, you know, around them. It's just such a great freaking dude. Like, on the basketball level, but more important, like as a teammate and a father and all that stuff. And, you know, no one deserves it, but golly, you just look at him. And so that's why I feel bad.
The Bucks play the Pacers in Indiana tomorrow night at 5. Milwaukee down 3-1 in that best-of-7 series. Baseball, the Brewers beat the Cardinals 7-1 to snap a 4-game losing streak. They head to Chicago next to play the White Sox tomorrow night. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some storms could be severe tonight with hail, gusty winds, and even a tornado. Temps fall out of the 60s tonight into the 50s tomorrow as rain wraps early but breezy with clearing. Right now it's 80.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch The Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will dissect all the news from Wisconsin and beyond when Todd Alba joins us. Also, this shouldn't be a thing to wrap up the show. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. Hope your week has started out well. We're going to try to keep that going for you, if indeed it has. I'm joined today on the Maggie Dawn Show by my guest co-host, Tom Paulswitz. You're going to find Tom with me here every Monday. A little bit of change in our scheduling moving into the drive time slot. Welcome back to the show, Tom. Really good to have you here. Lots happening.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It felt like I was just here, though, because I was on last Thursday. But I got to tell you, Monday's a little bit different. There's a boatload of stuff that happened over the weekend. And I do have to tell you, though, I love your new show opening.
Oh, good. It's well, awesome. I'm glad. I hope all of you listening along with Tom and I enjoy some of the new elements that we have added to this fine program. Of course, as always and ever, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Let me tell you a little bit about what we've got in store for you this afternoon. Of course, we are going to need to dive a little deeper into the putative prosecution of Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan. I've reviewed the criminal complaint in detail. I've also reviewed Attorney General Pam Bondi's legal guidance to federal law enforcement agents when it comes to apprehending people suspected of being here illegally. And I have to tell you, there are pieces of this that are simply shocking. That memorandum was issued on March 14th. A question that I'll tease now and that we'll get into is, has Pam Bondi issued revised guidance since the Supreme Court has made clear that due process does in fact apply? Has Judge Dugan gotten due process? We're going to discuss all of that. We're also going to talk about these deportations of children who are United States citizens. Near as I can tell, nobody can actually deport someone who's a citizen. That's not a thing. We'll discuss one of these kids having stage 4 cancer. And all of this, of course, leads us inexorably to that big question that so many of us are grappling with, which is 100 days into Donald Trump's administration. What exactly is going on here? So we will discuss that as well. We have two fine guests this afternoon. At the bottom of this hour, we'll be joined by Sarah Anderson. She's the Global Economy Project Director. If you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you know that when we talk about wealth inequality and our tax system and the budgeting process in government, I believe that those are all expressions of our nation's values. In other words, we like to say we're all about hard work and bootstraps, but does our tax code actually reflect those values? Does the skyrocketing amount of wealth inequality and, frankly, a presidential cabinet filled with billionaire overlords speak to those values? We will discuss that with Sarah, Tom, and you all. And at 5:30, we'll be joined by Gina Krause-Vilmar, President and CEO of Upwardly Global. Upwardly Global is a leading voice in ensuring that skilled immigrants, refugees, and asylees who hold the right to work, in other words, they have a work permit or a visa permitting work, that those who are here that have a right to work can fully contribute to the United States workforce and our communities. As they have recently published a report examining the roles of immigrants in reviving the Great Lakes region, cannot wait to talk to Gina. She'll be joining us at 5:30. So let's jump right in here, Tom. I wanted to get your reactions. I know you took a listen to my fine colleague on two fronts, a fellow lawyer and a fellow broadcaster here with Civic Media, Jim Santel's fine program, Amicus, A Legal Brief, which you can hear on Saturdays. I know you took a listen to that, Tom. What do you make of Judge Dugan's arrest and the manner of her arrest? Public,
yes.
A perp walk, handcuffed.
Right. Handcuffed.
That picture is shocking. Of course, Kash Patel putting that up on X if you haven't seen it. It is a picture of Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan with her hands handcuffed behind her back being led into a federal vehicle by federal officials. What did you make of Friday's events?
Yeah, I think this is par for the course. You know, as I look at the Trump administration, it doesn't feel like they're actually interested in trying cases in court. They're interested in trying cases in the court of public opinion. And that whole spectacle was really meant to try to drive a change in public opinion about their deportation policies and that they're right, because they keep looking at the polls and watching the polls go sideways or south on all the issues that they think they won the election on. And so this is just another part of that whole thing, you know, handcuffing her, walking her out, you know, it didn't have to be that way. And I think Jim Santel did a great job of saying, look, this is normally the way you would handle these things, but none of this is normal. None of this is, I would say, based on the rule of law. It's all based on people not doing what the Trump administration would like them to do. So it goes back to a whole bunch of other things that are happening in the same vein.
Yeah, it seems to me to be unabashedly and unapologetically about fear and intimidation.
Yes.
We're going to get into the details of the criminal complaint, but I wanted to share a couple thoughts from Joyce Vance. She's a former federal prosecutor. Here's what Joyce Vance had to write in her Substack over the weekend. Why was the judge arrested? Normally, in cases like this that do not involve violence or a risk to community, or where there's some indication that a defendant might flee, a case goes next to the grand jury. And if indictment is issued, the defendant receives notice to appear in court. So what Joyce Vance is pointing out there is where you don't, in a case like Judge Dugan's, where there's no indication the person's going to flee from prosecution and there is absolutely no even articulable basis that there's any threat to the community, they will convene a grand jury and seek a federal indictment. That wasn't done here. One has to ask why. If you're going to charge a state court judge, this is the place that if I was a federal prosecutor, boy, I would want more process, more insulation of my decision making, not less. And they took the less process option. In fact, perhaps not so much due process option.
Right.
We'll get to that.
If you are concerned for the outcome.
Right.
But that's, I don't think that's the concern right now. The concern is the publicity of what they want to see being publicized across the country and across the world.
Yeah, and Joyce Vance points out the government is going to have to take the case to a grand jury to obtain an indictment in the next few weeks or face a preliminary hearing in court where they would have to present all their evidence, a step federal prosecutors typically avoid. She's pointing out that the arrest itself, completely unnecessary. If you're going to go after a judge, typically the point would be to go get again, convene a grand jury, obtain an indictment, and then ask for the person to surrender. The fact that none of that was occurring here, the fact that both Kash Patel and Pam Bondi, the I've got a hit list FBI director, and right. I'm not really sure if I'll actually follow court orders or the Constitution, Pam Bondi, attorney general. This isn't following any kind of normal practice. The manner of the execution of the arrest was sensationalized. And both of those individuals, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi, as I was saying, went on social media and on national news broadcasts and did something that is never done. And that is in a criminal case that is moving forward. They made arguments and statements that went outside of the four corners of the complaint. There is actual DOJ policy that prohibits people from doing that because it can prejudice the prosecution right. and lead to grounds for appeal. Right. So, again, you look at all of this and you step back. What's happening here has nothing, as you pointed out, Tom, nothing at all to do with the outcome or whether or not they actually think they're going to get a conviction. It has everything to do with shoot first, aim later, and try to scare the bejiggers out of anybody who might oppose the Trump's unconstitutional agenda when it comes to deportations.
Right. And it's not a well-thought-out plan.
It certainly is not.
They seem to be playing whack-a-mole in a whole bunch of different areas, you know, and today they came out with another couple of executive orders around, you know, deportation
right.
of undocumented people. And it's like they just keep saying over and over again what they think needs to happen. And I'm very curious to listen to our second guest today and what she thinks is happening in that world. So I think that's going to be a great conversation we're going to have there. But I guess in this instance, when I look back, it's par for the course. It's theater. It's legal theater instead of political theater, but it's almost the same thing. But we're talking about people's lives. And well, part of it is the cruelty and part of it is the flood the zone and shock and awe to try to take the perception away from what's really happening. Because you, Maggie, you know this, right? The number of container ships that are coming over from China, the amount of goods that are on them is going to be decreasing week by week over the next 6 weeks. And there are going to be store shelves empty by the time we get to June. And so they're doing everything in their power to make sure they control the narrative away from what's really happening with the economy.
Well, and to that point, Gary Cohn was on one of the morning talk shows yesterday. He's the CEO of IBM. And he basically said, you'll feel the pain at the end of May. Yes. Like container ships are moving around the world. Right. And many of them, they used to be completely full. But container ships must sail. They can't sit empty at ports. There are schedules. You got to keep them moving in and out. So they will sail whether or not they're full of cargo or not. And right. there are astoundingly huge numbers of container ships that are shockingly empty of goods.
Yes.
And so Gary's saying, hey, you're going to feel that at the end of May. I think a lot of this is to create, you know, the misdirection. But all of the theater, again, has a very real personal cost. I mean, how much money will Judge Dugan have to expend to defend herself from these, what I'm going to just call it, absolutely bogus charges? Folks, right. if you want to join our conversation this afternoon, 855-752-4842. We had to get through so much of it on Friday. I was very upset in discussing it. So if you would like to rejoin that conversation today, please do so at 855-75-CIVIC. We got Cindy from Appleton. Say hello to Tom. What are your thoughts this afternoon, Cindy?
Well, I'm just disgusted. I can't even believe this is happening. And I want to go back to where you talked about people, you know, the taxation issue and tax breaks for the wealthy and the disparity. I don't think enough people care yet, and I don't think enough people care about what's going on with these deportation issues. But maybe once they come with container ships that are empty and people are starting to fight for food, maybe then some of these people will wake up and smell the coffee.
Mm. I certainly hope it doesn't come to that, Cindy, but it seems we've entered into a new phase in our government where unless people feel the pain themselves, they won't believe what they see with their very eyes. They have to feel it.
Yep.
Have we all become Judases? I mean, it's not just a Judas, but Peters, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We all meant Peter.
Just a lack of empathy for others.
Yes. When we get back, I'm going to dive into the complaint and tell you how stupid these charges are, because I got some time to reflect and read it over the weekend. We got Tom Paulsowitz with me and each and every one of you. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join this great conversation. 855-75-4842. Is the prosecution of Hannah Dugan doomed to fail? We discuss next.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or Avacincaptad Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. On April 22nd, in the Wisconsin State Senate, something happened that you don't see too often. A high-profile bill passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. The Republican-controlled chamber voted 32-1 to extend Medicaid coverage for new moms from 60 days to 12 months. Wisconsin is one of only two U.S. states that has not already extended this critical postpartum coverage. So with that kind of support, you'd expect the bill to pass, right? Well, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has repeatedly blocked this legislation from coming up for a vote. Several Republican state representatives have been speaking out on this, urging Voss to change his tune, but he has not yet budged. It's time for Voss to end this charade and allow this bill to come up for a vote. If he's opposed, he can still vote against it. But one person should not block a bill that has already been supported by the majority of his own party. Let the people vote, Mr. Speaker.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Problems all inside my head. I think the problem is very real and happening every day. Flouting of our constitutional principles. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, as I am every Monday now. I'm joined by a fantastic co-host. His name is Tom Paulsowitz. He's a small business owner, a Navy veteran, and a two-time congressional candidate, but most importantly, an all-around reasonable guy. You can join my conversation with Tom and each one of you by calling or texting us at 855-752-4842. You can also go get the Civic Media app wherever you like to get your apps for free. Listen clearly wherever you may be, and with the app, click one little button to text or call us. We make it so very simple that you don't have to remember that complicated phone number. So please do join us, 855-752-4842. I want to just zoom in, on a few things in the criminal complaint. First of all, I think everybody should read it. We'll include a link to the complaint in our show notes today. Suffice it to say, I could rewrite the criminal complaint without all of the sort of like cloak and dagger implications in the complaint, and it would read like a nothing burger. In other words, there were law enforcement officers that did not have a Fourth Amendment tested warrant, so no probable cause finding. And we'll talk a little later in the show about the complete lack of any procedural meaningful safeguards in the issuance of these things that shouldn't be called warrant, these pieces of paper signed by anybody that works in federal law enforcement that apparently gives them the right to just, you know, disappear people off the street. But the entire tone of it, it takes the mundane and gives it this patina of intrigue and wrongdoing. For example, it describes the defendant and his lawyer after leaving the courtroom. By the way, they're in a public place now. They're just in the normal public courthouse hallway. Walked down the hall to the elevators, passing one bank of elevators and heading to the next. Dun, dun, dun. Well, since I work in the courthouse, I know that you've got two different banks of elevators.
Yes, exactly.
One goes down to the parking level basement area. The other does not. And you can exit to the main exit on foot. People opt to take who cares what elevators they were taking?
Well, now somebody's taking the wrong elevator. It's important to get on the right elevator.
Yeah, it's just stupid. Like, that does not a federal criminal charge make. And they the whole charge seems to boil down to the fact that she asked the agents to go talk to the chief judge, concluded her proceedings, and then had the man exit through a non-public hallway into a public hallway.
Right.
She can do that. It's not a violation of federal law. Obstruction or concealing someone, both of which require intent. Oh, yes, by the way, which good luck proving that. There are no facts that I think even give rise to a reasonable inference, let alone an inference that could pass the standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. Zero, zippo, zilch. And you had better bet that Judge Dugan would get on the stand and say, listen, I didn't want my entire courtroom's proceeding turned into a circus because of immigration enforcement. Right. I don't want people in my courtroom to feel afraid. I did not want any arrest to take place in my courtroom, which the chief judge told the agents was considered and should be considered to be a non-public space. To wit, it's the court, the judge's discretion if they want members of the public in the gallery, whether they want cameras there, whether they want members of the media. Right. So,
for all sorts of different reasons.
Correct.
Yes.
So she has total control. They might have exited out a side door, but the side door leads into the big old public hallway, and they arrested the guy.
Right.
Like, it's just so bizarre that I just don't understand what concealment. Because she had them leave out of door B and not A, but you still arrested the guy. Here's from the complaint.
Hold on before you read any more. Can't you picture like Pam Bondi and Stephen Miller sitting around trying to write this in a way that's the most inflammatory way possible in order to get the most amount of press? Like, that was the whole point. It was
exactly
right. It was just this. All right, we need to add some intrigue and some drama into it and go, okay, this is so the entire Fox crowd goes, oh, this is so terrible. This is terrible what this judge.
Well, first of all, Calvin, give everybody, let's play the Pam Bondi, what she said on air.
They're deranged is all I can think of. I cannot believe, I think some of these judges think they are beyond and above the law, and they are not. And we're sending a very strong message today. If you are harboring a fugitive, we don't care who you are. If you are helping hide one, if you are giving a TDA member guns, anyone who is illegally in this country, we will come after you and we will prosecute you. We will find you.
You know what I think is deranged? An attorney general speaking in such language about the arrest of a state court judge who is exerting her right to control a courtroom. You know what I think is deranged? That same attorney general, in addressing the arrest of a sitting state court judge, talking about giving guns to gang members. This man hasn't been proved to be a gang member. There's no allegation relating to weapons. This is bananas, and there is no way they are going to be able to prove that she intended to obstruct
Right.
There is no way that they're going to be able to prove that she actually harbored or concealed the man. They knew where he was the whole time. And right. this, from the complaint, it's so, the complaint itself is so internally contradictory that it legitimately makes no damn sense. It says this: agents then saw Mr. Flores Ruiz and his lawyer in a public hallway, and one agent entered an elevator with them and watched them leave the building.
Right. But they didn't know where he was.
What?
Every accusation is a confession.
I think I'm going to get that tattooed on my forehead. Every accusation by Cash, Money Money, Patel, Pam, maybe I'll follow the Constitution, Bondi, right. is a confession.
News from the center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local.
WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A disturbance at a residence resulted in an arrest. Vernon County Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports that Sunday morning at approximately 8 o'clock, the Sheriff's Office 911 Dispatch Center was notified that an individual was attempting to forcefully enter a neighboring single-family dwelling located on County Road LF in rural Viroqua in the town of Viroqua. The caller reported that a male was yelling, kicking a door, and gained entry to the home. Deputies responded within 8 minutes of the 911 call. An officer from the Viroqua Police Department also responded to assist the sheriff's office with this in-progress call for service. Within moments of the officer's arrival, Nicholas Thomas Cocagian, 33, of rural Genoa, was detained without further incident. Cocagian was previously known to the victim, but was not an occupant, nor did he have permission to enter the home. Nicholas Cocagian was arrested and later booked into the Sheriff's Office Detention Center for criminal trespass to dwelling, criminal damage to property, possession of drug paraphernalia, and operating while intoxicated, second offense. This year's Mifflin Street Block Party in Madison saw fewer arrests than last year. Madison police say around 40 people were arrested at the annual party near the UW-Madison campus. Most of those stops were citations for alcohol-related offenses. This year's party also saw less property damage. Last year, a car was flipped over and a deck collapsed from the weight of too many partygoers. The party started as a student protest against the Vietnam War, but now is just a party before final exams start at UW-Madison. The final winter market of the season will be held Wednesday at the Richland Center Community Center. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Two Hollywood movers and shakers are about to get even busier as they team up for a new psychological thriller. American Hostage is a new series from MGM Plus and will star John Hamm, and Sean Ryan will executive produce. The show is set in the 70s and follows Hamm's character, who is a reporter forced to interview a hostage taker in the middle of a crisis. Hamm is currently starring in Your Friends and Neighbors, and Ryan recently executive produced and wrote The Night Agent. Pamela Anderson's recent film, The Last Showgirl, brought her critical praise and some Oscar buzz, but it did not result in a nomination. Not sure if it's a snub or not, but according to the New York Post, it motivated the Baywatch actress to retaliate by moving to Massachusetts to do theater. Anderson will star in Tennessee Williams' Camino Real this coming summer. Anderson made her Broadway debut in Chicago in 2022. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some storms could be severe tonight with hail, gusty winds, and even a tornado. Temps fall out of the 60s tonight into the 50s tomorrow as rain wraps early but breezy with clearing.
Right now it's 80.
reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
The advantage of being a high school dropout is what you don't have. Like, you don't get it. That is below the dignity of your station, man.
Derek Van Orden wants you to know, as a kid, he was on food stamps. He was raised by a single mom. Me too. Attacking and belittling a witness, using your personal story to somehow justify it, it doesn't make you right. You know what's below the dignity of your station? Being a jerk while someone is raising valid concerns about the jerk move that you're about to make.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. There is one word that Donald Trump has for what he thinks about the world. We'll discuss it along with Pat Kreitlow of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, if this isn't your first time listening to this show, you know that I have a particular amount of energy for income and wealth inequality and the rigged tax system. Rigged? Yes, indeed, rigged. Rigged to place an ever-increasing burden for funding the most basic functions of government on working families and the poorest among us. Donald Trump has said some pretty extraordinary things over the past few days about taxes, including his desire to magically maybe even get rid of income taxes in favor of going to a complete tariff tax revenue system. This would, of course, let billionaires abscond without paying a single dime or very few dimes, as it were, and place an incredibly regressive amount of tax burden on the poorest among us because tariffs are regressive, meaning they hurt working people more than they do the ultra wealthy. Here to help us understand all that is happening in this space is Sarah Anderson. She's the Global Economy Project Director for the Institute of Policy Studies. If you want to know more about this topic, you want to go to inequality.org. Sarah, welcome, welcome, welcome. We are in the midst of an epic battle over our country's values and how those are expressed in our tax code, are we not?
Absolutely. Things are really heating up on Capitol Hill over taxes, and that's because they pretty much have to pass a tax package. And that's because the tax bill that passed in 2017 with all Republican support, not one Democrat voted for it. And many of the provisions in that tax law are expiring at the end of this year. And so Republicans don't want them to just expire. They want to renew a lot of those provisions and pass some more tax breaks for the rich in there as well. And it's part of this bigger budget process where they're looking at really deep cuts to a lot of critical social programs that millions of Americans rely on in order to fund these tax giveaways to billionaires and other ultra-wealthy Americans.
I hear Republicans, including and probably most notably Speaker Mike Johnson, deny that they are considering draconian cuts to fill-in program that millions and millions and millions of Americans rely on. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, SNAP benefits, school lunches, I mean, you name it, it's on the cutting block. They keep denying that that's happening. They also love to play what I'm going to call like don't pay any attention to the details games. They'll talk about tax cuts as a general concept, but they never tell you to which income quartile the vast majority of the tax cuts, who benefits the most? Who's getting the most bang for this reduction in tax cuts, the most bang for this buck? And the reality is they've avoided those analyses. They did it when they passed the first Donald Trump tax giveaway to billionaires and 100 millionaires and the wealthy corporations. They're doing it again here. Who's right? Should we be believing what Republicans are saying about cuts to these programs? That's not going to happen. We'll just all do better with less taxes and everything will sort out. Who should we believe?
Yeah, well, let me pick apart some of what you said there. So they're denying that they're going to make deep cuts to programs like Medicaid and food stamps and Social Security and all. But if you look at the math, the amount of funding that they have told the committees to cut, it would be mathematically almost impossible to not make deep cuts, particularly in Medicaid and food stamps, as just one example. And so when they say we're not going to make cuts, they might claim, oh, we're just cutting out the waste, fraud, and abuse. But there's no way to cut like $800 billion out of Medicaid and have it only be from waste, fraud, and abuse. There's just not that much waste, fraud, and abuse to cut. These are actually very effective anti-poverty programs. And so that's one tricky thing that they might try to play on us is denying that they made deep cuts to people who actually deserve these supports. You know, on what you said about Donald Trump, you know, should we switch to just getting all of our revenue from tariffs and eliminating income taxes? I mean, that's one thing he's been floating. And it is insane because the tariffs will trickle down to consumers. And like you said, that is regressive. They hit people who spend, you know, a large share of every paycheck on buying stuff that they really need to get by. People at the top end can squirrel away, you know, tons of their wealth because they don't need to spend it on consumer consumption. They can invest it in the markets. They can do other things with their money. It's the people who are really having to go out and fork over, you know, most of their paycheck for these consumer goods that could go up a lot in price because of the tariffs, who would really suffer under a system like that.
Yeah, Sarah, exactly. So Sarah, one
quick follow-up question. And then I'm going to toss it to you, Tom, to ask Sarah a couple questions. Do we tax a dollar earned from wealth in the same way that we tax the exact same dollar earned from work?
We give preferential tax treatment to income from wealth over income from work. And so I'll give you a concrete example. We just put out a report on Amazon looking in very, you know, great detail at how that company and the executives at that company have benefited from our current rigged tax system. So Jeff Bezos, he makes hardly anything in salary, normal paycheck like the rest of us get. Almost all his money is from his investments and his wealth. And since 2018, he has sold about $37 billion worth of Amazon stock. And do you want to know how much more he would have owed on the capital gains from those stock sales if we did tax wealth the same as we tax income from work? He would have owed $6.2 billion more. And so that is, you know, $6.2 billion that Jeff Bezos gets to put in his pocket because we have this double standard of favoring income from wealth and taxing it much less than we tax ordinary income. And that's why millions of teachers and firefighters actually pay a lower tax rate than people like Jeff Bezos and other extraordinary wealthy Americans.
And I think you mean to say the inverse, that regular working class, middle class Americans pay higher income tax rates. Tom, my friend, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And I think the Republicans have done a really good job of this, of painting these tax cuts, the Bush tax cuts, the Trump one tax cuts, and now these, the continuation, as this trickle down economics that are going to help everybody, yet proven over and over again, don't help everybody. In fact, exacerbate income inequality. You know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about potentially universal basic income and things like that when we're looking at trying to level the playing field. How do we get the narrative back to help people understand that these tax cuts do not in any way, shape, or form help them? In fact, it hurts their lives, because it seems like that to me is the hardest message to help people understand, because they continually vote for tax cuts. If a politician says tax cuts, they're voting for it, even though it's not their tax cuts.
Yeah. Well, back in 2017, I was in the middle of that debate, and I remember one big corporation after another said, you pass this big tax cut on the corporate tax rate, and we're going to turn that right into higher wages for our workers and hand out all these bonuses and everything. And we now have all of these years, 8 years now, of data to look at, well, what really did happen to ordinary working people? And studies show that anybody making less than like $140,000 a year saw no benefits whatsoever from slashing the corporate tax rate. That was just a complete myth that was going to translate into better pay and more quality jobs in America. You know, I think people, what's really going to overshadow this debate is the tariff issue and rising consumer prices. I think people are going to get it that even if they get like a very small tax cut out of this legislation, it's not going to make up for the rise in prices. And when they see that the CEOs of a lot of these companies that are going to be charging them more are getting much bigger tax cuts than they are, and also the growing influence of these executives and billionaires over our democracy, over our government, I think that people are going to see it for what it is. And that's one reason why, you know, we expect them to try to rush this through, because yes, the more people really look at the details of what's going to be in these, but the very, you know, fine details of what's going to be in this budget proposal and the tax package, it's not going to age well. The longer that members of Congress have to hear from their constituents about this, I think more and more people are going to be speaking out, and it's going to be harder to get it through.
I wanted to do some compare and contrast, Sarah, and to all of our listeners. If you are able to grab a pen and paper, you're going to want to remember these statistics I'm about to give to you, because they are so stark and shocking. In 1973, the top 1% of income earners, and remember, most of the billionaire class, they ain't earning income, right? So, but with that in mind, the top 1% of income earners took home 9% of all income. That's in 1973. In 2023, the top 1% took home 26.5% of all income. Okay, so that's category one. But more fundamentally than that, the thing that I like to remind everyone, and this gets right to your point, Sarah, about the Tax Cuts and, quote, Jobs Act from Trump 1, which was just a giveaway. It was welfare for corporations, and it was welfare for rich people, okay, which makes no damn sense. The idea has always been that if workers are more productive and everybody's getting richer, the worker too will get richer, right? And so, hey, if that's working mostly, it may be a little less taxes for the so-called job creators makes sense. This is the fundamental argument. Mm-hmm. However, every bit of data that we have shows us that exactly the opposite is happening. Specifically, from 1948 to 1973, worker productivity increased 97%. And over that same period of time, what you expect for our most basic social contract is worker hourly wages to rise in equal proportion. And indeed you did. This is from 1948 to 1973. Worker productivity up 97%, hourly wages up 91%. Aha! That's the social contract. But since 1973, and this is the study I was looking at that I believe is very objectively reasonable, this only goes through 2014, but 1973 to 2014, worker productivity up 91%, hourly wages up 9.2%. That is a breach of the social contract, not to the middle class's benefit, but to the rich billionaire overlord benefits. We're going to continue this conversation with Sarah Anderson, Global Economy Project Director at inequality.org, co-editor of the Institute for Policy Studies. Because it's all about the money, damn it. Most of it trickles up while the tax burden is trickling down. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. As if the Federal Election Commission didn't have enough problems, another member has reportedly chosen not to continue when his term runs out April 30th. That leaves the normally six-member commission with three and unable to conduct business. FEC members are nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and by law should have three Republicans and three Democrats. A Republican member, Sean Cooksey, resigned effective January 20th, and days later, President Donald Trump fired, likely illegally, FEC Chair Democrat Ellen Weintraub in a one-sentence letter. That left the minimum number of commissioners to conduct business until now. News outlet Notice is reporting that Republican Commissioner Alan Dickerson steps down April 30th, leaving only three members and no quorum. The typically ineffectual FEC, due to its equal partisan numbers, will cease hearings, rulemaking, and actions on campaign finance complaints for the fourth time in its history. Two previous shutdowns were in 2019 and 2020 during the first Trump administration. Donald Trump, subject of scores of past and present campaign finance complaints, including the notorious Stormy Daniels payoff, has already fired inspectors general in 17 federal agencies, so he's unlikely to be in a hurry to nominate any new FEC commissioners. We have more on the FEC's struggles to keep elections fair at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Day one, the hardest day, the day you hear.
This is a type of blood cancer.
But day one is just one day. At the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, we are here to help you move past day one.
On day 45, I discovered an online community who shared great tips for in-treatment care.
I missed a lot of school during treatment, and LLS helped me keep up.
To learn more and get help on day two, day 28, or any day, please visit LLS.org or call 1-800-955-4572.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross, calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Albaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch The Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If Donald Trump is able to make good on his tax promises to his billionaire donors, here's what's going to happen. The 10 largest U.S. companies alone, including Meta, Comcast, and J.P. Morgan Chase, will receive a total estimated annual tax cut of $23 billion. They reported more than $520 billion in profit in the last tax year. Donald Trump's tax cuts for billionaires and the world's wealthiest corporations will give the five largest U.S. oil companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Marathon Petroleum, Phillips 66, and Valero Energy, an annual total tax cut of $2.5 billion. They reported more than $90 billion in profits last year. The five largest drug makers, they'll get a tax cut of $3.1 billion. They reported $50 billion plus in profits. I can go on. The five largest Wall Street banks, tax cut of $4.1 billion. And they reported $113 billion in profits. Not revenue, profits. Give the five largest grocery companies in the United States a tax cut of $1.7 billion. By the way, they have had their most profitable years ever in the last 2 years, reporting over $29 billion in profits in last year alone. You want to know why your grocery prices are still high? Well, that may be part of it, and Donald Trump wants to just drive them higher with tariffs. Overall, 2023 saw the highest corporate profits of all time, ever. And profit margins are now at a 70-year high. There is no need for more corporate welfare. There's no need for billionaires to pay less. Meanwhile, us folks, we're going to have to pick up the pieces. My guest today is helping us understand the stakes of this next tax debate. Her name is Sarah Anderson with the Global Economy Project. You can find out more about their work at inequality.org. She's also co-editor of the Institute for Policy Studies. Thanks so much for sticking around, Sarah. If there's one thing you want people to do, what is it?
Well, members of Congress need to be hearing from their constituents right now, and the more they do, the more pressure they're going to feel to not just make this legislation a big tax giveaway to big corporations and the billionaires while slashing some of the most vital social programs that really make such a difference to low and middle income families. You know, you were talking about those corporate profit rates and how deep the tax cuts could be for these companies. This is just a flashback for me to 2017, the last time there was a big Republican tax bill. And they said, you know, you slash our taxes, we're going to pass those tax windfalls on to working families. And instead, you know what they did in 2018, the year after the tax bill, they went out and spent over $1 trillion on stock buybacks. Yes. So this is just this financial maneuver. It's when they go out and they repurchase their own stock. And it's just a scam to artificially inflate the value of their shares. And one thing that does is it also inflates the paychecks of the CEOs because they get most of their compensation form of stock-based pay. And so that's what they did with their tax windfall last time. We cannot let them get away with that again. And it's not just about, you know, not giving the windfalls to workers. They also have not been putting money into R&D and other long-term capital investments that are so critical if we're going to continue to have a competitive economy in the world. We did one report looking at the 100 largest low-wage companies, and over the past 5 years, they had spent more on stock buybacks than they had spent on long-term capital investments. And that's scary for the long-term future of our economy.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about, though, is it seems like these tax breaks, so they have more money to invest or spend, so they buy back stocks, but they also buy U.S. bonds. So not only are we not collecting the tax money, we're paying interest on the money that we should have collected. It just seems like a double whammy, you know. But the bigger picture is, aren't there some billionaires who are going, wait a minute, we need people, we need money in the economy. We need people to have their basic needs met so they can buy the products and services that we have to offer. It just seems like there's no pushback right now from any of the billionaire class to say, wait a minute, are we bringing too much? Are we carving out too much out of the economy for ourselves and not leaving enough for the economy to actually keep moving?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the Henry Ford principle, right? You pay your workers enough to buy the products that you're making. So he made sure that they could afford to buy Ford cars way, way back when. And today, the model is really how much can we squeeze out of both workers and consumers in order to funnel money up to the top? And it's not a, an enlightened, you know, sustainable approach to a good business. And we should be using our tax code to encourage better practices. We could be increasing tax rates on companies that have extremely wide gaps between their CEO and worker pay, and encourage a broader sharing of the wealth within companies, which would help with employee morale. You know, study after study has shown that that would actually, you know, help people feel more like they're part of a team and give their all on the job. And instead, we have this crazy notion that the guy in the corner office is almost single-handedly responsible for company value, and that's just completely not true.
To that point exactly, Ross Stores, with the lowest median worker pay in the country, has the widest pay gap. In 2021, the CEO made $18.1 million. Their average compensated worker made $8,600. That is a CEO to average hourly worker ratio of 2,100. Unbelievable, by the way, in 1965, the CEO to worker pay ratio was 20.
Yeah. Nobody's worth 2,000 times more than anybody else. I'm sorry.
No one is. Thanks so much to Sarah Anderson.
Thank you.
You can check out more of their work at inequality.org. Yes, that's inequality.org. We'll be back with myself and Tom Paulswitz after these brief messages on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In Clearwater, Florida, police say one person died, 10 others were injured after that collision between a ferry and private boat last night. It happened near the Memorial Causeway Bridge. That boat slammed into the ferry carrying 45 people. Police say then it left the scene. Major Evan Laskowski is with Florida Fish and Wildlife, the lead agency on the case.
Multiple folks with broken bones, a lot of orthopedic injuries, a great deal of soft tissue injuries. You did have some head injuries, and of course, we have the decedent as well.
Police say they have not made any arrests and are still investigating the incident. That private boat, police say, has been identified. The Navy is investigating a fighter jet that rolled off the USS Truman today and sank into the Red Sea. Two enlisted crew members jumped out, their injuries unknown. President Trump welcoming the Philadelphia Eagles to the White House today, celebrating the team's Super Bowl victory in February and honoring the champions. This is ABC News.